This is the State of Things from Triad Stage in Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. Jill Marker was savagely beaten at a Winston-Salem shopping center in 1995. Her assailant left her emotionally traumatized and severely brain damaged. Marker was pregnant at the time and gave birth to a son while in a coma. Today, Jill Marker lives in Ohio under round-the-clock assisted care. Calvin Michael Smith is the man convicted of the crime. He lives in prison. Smith says he's innocent, and there's good reason to believe he may be telling the truth. A number of inquiries into the way Winston-Salem police handled the investigation raised serious questions about Smith's guilt. A citizens committee, the Winston-Salem Journal newspaper, the Innocence Project at Duke Law School, and a truth commission have taken critical looks at how law enforcement may have botched the case. Calvin Michael Smith is hoping for a new trial in federal district court. The Winston-Salem City Council has been asked to show its support for a new trial. Smith has already served 15 and a half years of his 29-year prison. Today, we'll look back at the case, and we will explore the parallels between this story and that of Daryl Hunt. With us is Michael Hewlett. He is legal affairs reporter for the Winston-Salem Journal. Michael, welcome.
Thank you.
So take us back to this crime, 1995. What happened to Jill Marker?
Jill Marker was an assistant store manager at the Silk Plant 4 store. It was a store in the Solis Creek Crossing Shopping Center on Solis Creek Parkway. The attack happened around 8:45, 8:55 p.m. at night. And she was beaten around the head. Medical experts said that she was hit about 20 times. She was found in the back of the store. It was a very bloody crime scene. There weren't any witnesses to the actual attack, and that's been kind of the question over the years. There have been people who may have placed Calvin Michael Smith at the scene of the crime.
Right. And initially, she wasn't expected to survive at all.
She wasn't expected to survive at all. So, I mean, it was that brutal.
Right, which meant that it initially went to homicide detectives.
Yeah, it went to Detective Barnes. Then when they figured out that she was going to survive, it then got assigned to Don Williams, who was a detective in the robbery section of the police department.
So who were the initial suspects in the case?
There were a number of suspects. There was a Shane Fletcher who basically admitted to beating Jill Marker, but there were serious problems with his account that didn't match up with the evidence. There was a Kenneth Lamoureux early in the investigation who had a history of violence. He had a domestic violence restraining order against him by his wife and who had been seen at the store on the night of the attack. And then there was a Michael Fuller, who apparently was behind the wheel of a burgundy car outside the store that was seen idling.
So how does Calvin Michael Smith come into this picture?
At some point, the police department received a tip that Calvin Michael Smith had apparently admitted to the robbery and admitted to beating Jill Marker. It turns out later that the tip came from a former girlfriend of his, and she said that he had admitted it to her. At some point, the police actually cleared him. This was back in 1996. Then about a year later, there was another tip that came in, and Calvin Michael Smith again became a suspect, and this time it stuck.
All right, and there's a confession, or not a confession, but this tip from a former girlfriend with whom he was actually having trouble at the time. And then there was, at some point, once they brought him in 96, a confession. He confessed to police, to something.
The police, he actually voluntarily came into the police department. The police department interviewed him. It was an interview led by Don Williams. And there's a lot of controversy about that interview, but he did issue a statement saying that he had been at the store. He never did admit to beating Jill Marker, but he did say that he was at the store.
Meanwhile, Jill Marker positively identified Calvin Michaels.
That's another question as to whether or not she positively identified him. There were Williams went to her at least twice. And she was given, she was shown a photo layout of possible suspects in which Calvin Michael Smith was among them. Williams has said that she, at least I think in the second interview, which was not videotaped. The first interview was videotaped, but there was a second interview that was not videotaped in which Williams indicates that she somehow positively identified. Now, at this point, she wasn't able to talk, so a lot of the interview was about her body language, kind of sign language, to indicate that apparently she had a strong reaction when she saw Calvin Michael Smith.
So this is, in a sense, police interpretation of what she was doing when she saw this picture.
Exactly.
She also has said that she didn't have any recollection of the attack itself.
I believe that's true.
So this is a case now where the attack happened in 95. Calvin Michael Smith is arrested in 96. What happened to the other suspect, the one who had a history of abuse and also had a relationship? He knew Jill Marker.
He knew. Kenneth Lamoureux did know Marker, and in fact, there was a witness at the store, Jenna Schopfer, who told police that Kenneth Lamoureux, on the night of the attack, had come into the store and had asked Jill Marker, who was murdered at this time, out on a date, and that she refused, and that he became very upset and stormed out of the store.
And they knew each other from, she also worked at a daycare center.
She worked at a daycare
child,
center.
And he had also approached her a couple of times while she was there for dates and that sort of thing. So what happened to him? Did police pursue?
It's not clear. And this is one key issue, is that Kendall Lamoureux is white. Calvin Michael Smith is black. So it's been kind of a critical part of the investigation as to the fact that apparently Jill Marker,
Jill Marker is white,
identified her attacker as apparently identified, according to police, as a black man. Apparently, at some point, once she, I think, according to Williams, once he got the idea that Jill Marker believed that her attacker was black, they dropped Kenneth Lamoureux as a suspect.
Who then got an attorney and moved to Charlotte.
Yes.
So then the trial goes forward and he's convicted. There was no material evidence at the scene and the murder weapon hasn't been recovered, as I understand. Is that right?
There was no, the murder weapon was never recovered. There's no DNA or physical evidence that puts Calvin Michael Smith at the scene of the crime. A lot of the evidence in the case comes from witnesses. One of the crucial witnesses is a man named Eugene Littlejohn, who had told police that he and Calvin Michael Smith had planned this robbery together, that he was there. The problem is that his statements were always different. He wasn't really reliable. He always changed his statements.
And there were some questions about how they got that, a technique that Detective Williams used, which was to implicate him in the crime and suggest that if he could find a way to implicate someone else, things might go better for him.
Yes.
And that's apparently a pretty standard process, because I've seen Detective Williams interviewed since, and he said, well, you got to do that. You got to lie. I'm working with criminals here.
Well, there have been kind of a couple of things with Williams' investigation. One of the things is that he didn't document certain evidence. So there was no way to really scrutinize or figure out what was true or what was not, or what happened during an interview or did not, because he apparently did not document certain evidence.
But Calvin Michael Smith was convicted on what evidence? How did that conviction come about?
There was a trial. Jill Marker testified and ID'd Calvin Michael Smith in court. I believe Eugene Littlejohn testified. There are other witnesses, including former girlfriends who had actually tipped the police off to Calvin Michael Smith, and they testified. I do know that the jury had a lot of questions about Eugene Littlejohn's testimony, but eventually they did convict him.
Some of which was amended because he said it was done, initially that the murder happened in the front of the store. That was later amended, and he initialed that amendment to the...
Yeah, because the attack apparently happened in the back of the store.
It didn't. The attack itself, I should say. The attack happened in the in the back of the store. We will find out what happened in subsequent investigations because Calvin Michael Smith has maintained his innocence. He did then. He has now. He has served 15 and a half years in prison. And we'll find out what some of the complaints are and what some investigators have found about the initial investigation into that attack when our conversation continues. More on the Silk Plant Forest story. But first, we also have with us today here in Greensboro, singer-songwriter William Howard, who's going to play us out on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us. Here's William Howard.
I was roaming around. I was looking down at all I see. Change of faces for the places I can't reach. You know that I could use somebody. Oh, you know that I could use somebody. Someone like you. Wars to shake the poet and the beast. Off in the night, while you live it up, I'm on to sleep. I hope it's gonna make you lonelier. Yeah, I hope it's gonna make you lonelier.
This is the State of Things broadcasting from Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. My guest this hour, Michael Hewlett, legal affairs reporter for the Winston-Salem Journal newspaper. In 2002, the paper launched an investigative series into the story of Calvin Michael Smith. Smith was convicted of brutally assaulting Jill Marker and leaving her for dead outside the Silk Plant Forest store in 1995. The Journal criticized many elements of the initial police investigation in the case. And, Michael, you weren't at the paper when that investigation was launched. But tell us about the series and why the paper decided to go back over the case.
The series was in 2004. I was at the paper at that time. Phoebe Zurich was a reporter who took about 6 months to look at the case. She interviewed a lot of the witnesses that were involved in the case, and it was over 5 days.
What was it about the case that got her? And Phoebe, by the way, is the one who did the reporting on Daryl Hunt's case that got that reopened and ultimately resolved.
I'm not quite exactly sure what prompted it, but I think that the Daryl Hunt case, and I think there was a lot of questions, is there another case like Daryl Hunt out there? And the case that kept coming back was the Calvin Michael Smith case.
Let's talk for a minute about Daryl Hunt's case. He's someone who served almost 20 years in prison for a murder, in this case, that he did not commit. A couple of retrials, but even when DNA evidence showed that he was not the one who had committed the rape, which was part of this, it was a rape and murder, he was not freed from prison. It took actually matching the DNA to the individual who did the crime to get him out of jail after 19 and a half years.
Yes, there were two trials with Daryl Hunt. There was a DNA test that exonerated him from the rape back in 1994. But the theory was that, well, maybe if he didn't rape her, he could have still killed her. And I think that there was also a theory that he was maybe among several other people who were involved.
And there were, again, in that case, other suspects in the case who were quickly dismissed once they had Daryl Hunt. So those are some of the things that may have gotten Phoebe's attention in this case. What did the paper find? What were the main conclusions after investigating this story, this case?
The Calvin Michael Smith.
Now we're talking about Calvin Michael
Smith. Calvin Michael Smith. One of the main conclusions is that the police investigation seems to be botched. Essentially that they focused very clearly on Calvin Michael Smith and didn't seem to be interested in following up any other leads or any other possible suspects. One of the main things was that Kenneth Lamoureux was eliminated as a suspect. There were also problems with how police detectives, particularly Williams, conducted photo lineups. One of the things now that a lot of police departments are doing is that the detective who's involved in the case is not allowed to be involved in doing the photo lineups because they believe that that person might have some influence.
And even there's a lot of questions, too, about the identification that Jill Marker made, because there are serious questions about, first of all, the amount of damage that had been done from the beating, but also the general unreliability of eyewitness testimony.
There have been a lot of questions about whether or not witness statements were coerced, the reliance on Eugene Littlejohn, who seemed to keep changing his story during the course of the investigation. Also, Audra Williams and Valerie Audra Wilson and Valerie Williams, who were both ex-girlfriends of Calvin Michael Smith, and what their motives were, and whether or not their statements actually made any sense if you compare it to the physical evidence and what seems to have happened to Jill Marker.
Calvin Michael Smith was sent to prison in Winston-Salem and immediately, I guess, sought out Daryl Hunt, did he not?
Yes, because around the time that Calvin Michael Smith was sentenced, Daryl Hunt's case had already gotten a lot of attention because Daryl Hunt was convicted in 84-85. So a lot of people knew there was a lot of activism surrounding Daryl Hunt's case already. And so, yes, I think right before Daryl Hunt was about to be released from prison, somewhere along those lines, Calvin Michael Smith sought Daryl Hunt out. And ever since, Daryl Hunt has actually been one of the people who has raised questions about his case.
And others have gotten involved as well. Duke University's program, an innocence program, and there's an innocence commission in Winston-Salem that are both looking into this, right?
The only one that's really looking at it is the Innocence Project at Duke University. They have been looking at it. Calvin Michael Smith had early on contacted the Innocence Project at Duke University, and they took up his case, and they have been investigating the case, and they have come back with some of the same conclusions that the Winston-Salem Journal series came up with.
And a former FBI agent has been involved in one of the investigations, and he has some serious questions.
The Chris Wecker, who's a former FBI director, he may be familiar with some people because he co-authored an audit of the SBI crime lab that saw some problems. The Silk Plant Forest Truth Commission, which is made up of residents who have some serious questions about Calvin Michael Smith's case, hired him to do an independent investigation. And he released that report in May. And he saw some very serious problems with how the police handled the investigation, essentially that he believes that the police failed to follow up possible leads that could have led to other suspects, principally Kenneth Lamoureux. There was another guy, the guy I mentioned, Michael Fuller, that there was enough that they could have followed up, that there was enough that seemed to indicate maybe they needed more investigation.
And the way some of these interrogations were done, and not all of them were videotaped, so we don't have evidence of how they were conducted.
Right. Now, the police department now videotapes all investigations, but at the time that this happened, that wasn't a requirement. So the Calvin Michael Smith's interrogation was not videotaped. One of Joe Marker's interviews was not videotaped. So,
and that was the key interview where she identified in her own way Calvin Michael Smith.
And then there's also a question of a videotape at the Toys R Us that was also crucial to the case that no one has been able to account for.
And that's important because that's what Littlejohn, who is one of the witnesses in this case, said that they did afterward. They went into the...
Exactly.
And stole something.
Yeah, and no one's been able to find it, and no one knows where it is.
So the Winston-Salem police did look into this in 2009. What did they find?
The city formed a citizens committee made up of residents that they appointed, And they spent about 18 months, and they were assisted by two veteran police detectives. And they looked at the case. They even talked to Don Williams. They talked to many of the main players, and they found that there are serious problems with the police investigation, and they concluded that they had no confidence in the police investigation. And separately, 7-2, the committee said that they don't believe that there's any credible evidence that Calvin Michael Smith was at the scene of the crime.
You know, most of the complaints and the abnormalities and irregularities in this are things that could have come up in the trial. It seems to me not following up on other suspects, not videotaping the proceedings during the investigation. All of that is something a defense attorney is supposed to bring out in the trial, right? What happened?
Usually. I think that there are allegations that some information was not turned over to the defense attorney, that the full record was not made available to the defense attorney. So, yes, the defense attorney could have brought this up, but if he was not aware of it at the time, he couldn't bring it up.
And that would be a serious charge, because if you deliberately withhold exculpatory evidence, that is evidence that could help the defense, if you deliberately do that, that's a kind of malfeasance. There's something. You can be brought up on charges. If you're a lawyer, you can be disbarred and all of that, if you can demonstrate.
If you can demonstrate it.
If it's deliberate. So, but we don't know that any of that's happened. There was a trial. There are also, we talked about Daryl Hunt. There are differences, too, very serious differences in these two cases.
Well, I mean, a main big difference is that in Daryl Hunt's case, there was DNA evidence that could be tested that eventually led to a relative of a man named Willard Brown, who eventually confessed to the murder and the rape of Deborah Sykes. In this case, there's no physical evidence. They have the city has retested some evidence to try and see if there is any physical evidence there. Whatever blood that was at the scene of the crime belonged to Jill Marker. And there is no evidence that they've been able to find that seems to indicate that Calvin Michael Smith, that links Calvin Michael Smith to the scene.
And he has appealed his case in North Carolina.
Yeah, he went first through the state courts, like most people do. And then once he exhausted those appeals, the only avenue he has is through the federal court system.
What and I'm sure he brought all of this to their attention in those initial appeals. They were denied. What makes anybody think he has a better chance now in the federal court?
If he can demonstrate that there's some kind of new evidence or evidence that was not brought out in trial, he may have a chance. One of the things that people who have raised questions about this, especially recently, is that the police investigation led to a bad trial record. So they don't fault the jury or the judge in the case. And they're also, and in fact, Chris Swecker, I should make this point, FBI agent never said that the police department did anything deliberately to railroad Calvin Michael Smith, but that they made serious mistakes. But if you have a bad trial record, they say, it leads to a possible wrongful conviction. That's why you need to have a new trial.
And that's important, because in by itself, and this is why we have an actual innocence commission in the state of North Carolina, just the fact that there's new evidence in a case doesn't automatically mean that you can get a new trial. Mostly they're looking at how the trial was conducted to see whether or not you need a new trial. If there were serious errors in the conduct of the trial, you may get a new one. If there's new evidence, you may not. That's not always cause for a new trial.
Not always. It's his only chance right now to get a new trial. What's been asked of the city council is to file an amicus brief, which is basically a supporting document that says the city believes that the police investigation was botched and that Calvin Michael Smith deserves a new trial. And right now, that's what the city council is discussing.
Any idea or speculation what the council said or council members said?
It came before the Public Safety Committee a couple of weeks ago, and some of the city council members there seemed to be in support of doing something. Last night at the city council meeting, the members had a closed-door session with the city attorney to talk about legal options. That closed-door session is going to be continued to August 6th. So there's still a lot of discussion. The city really hasn't done something like this before. So there are obviously a lot of legal questions that they have to sort through.
Are there liability questions? If it turns out he was wrongfully convicted, is the city liable?
The only thing that we can point to right now is that in Daryl Hunt's case, after he was exonerated, the city formed a citizens committee, they released a report, and then they actually apologized to Daryl Hunt and awarded him $1.65 million.
What about the prosecutor and the police chief in the case? Let's go back to Daryl Hunt. Did anything happen to them? Because in that case, there was exculpatory evidence that was not brought out in the trial. And even the murder weapon itself turned up in another assault while Daryl Hunt was in jail. That murder weapon, the one that killed Deborah Sykes, went missing. So there are serious questions about their culpability. Did anything happen to the police chief or prosecutor in the case?
No.
So no consequences after that. There were changes, though. There were changes.
And what city officials will say is that yes, there were mistakes done in the Calvin Michael Smith case, and there were mistakes done in the Daryl Hunt case. But the police department back in the 80s and 90s is very, very different than the one that you have now. And what City Manager Lee Garrity says is that we would not have the kind of investigation that we had with Calvin Michael Smith. The mistakes that were made would not be made today.
I got the sense, I wasn't here then, but that the Daryl Hunt case was divisive in Winston-Salem, politically charged. What about this case?
I think that they're both charged. In both cases, you have a black man who's accused of, in Daryl Hunt's case, raping and killing a white woman, and in this case, beating a white woman. So there have been, and there has been a lot of activity. Particularly the Daryl Hunt case was particularly divisive.
Yeah, so there's a lot to consider. How are the police taking this? What are the apart from the fact that they're saying that could never happen again, we just don't do things that way, how do they feel about all of the new scrutiny on this old case?
That's still a question. I think that what the police would say, continue to say, is that yes, we made mistakes in that case, but we've put into place new policies and procedures to prevent that from happening.
Any sense that if there were a new trial, it would reflect on the current police department and they would in any way resist a new trial?
I think it's really out of their hands right now. It's really up to the federal judge to look at the entire record of this case and determine, based on what we know, should there be a new trial. Yeah.
What about Daryl Hunt? Has he had anything to say about this?
He believes that this case raises a lot of questions, and he sees a lot of similarities between how his case was handled and how Calvin Michael Smith's case was handled.
And what's next for Calvin Michael Smith? Where is the case right now?
The case in federal court is still pending. I believe he filed his federal appeal in 2010. It takes a while for federal appeals to go through. And so right now, and as far as the city council, it could probably be until the fall before they actually make a final decision. In federal court, there will have to be some kind of evidentiary hearing to hear all this and hear all the arguments.
What about Jill Marker? Where is she now and how is she doing?
Jill Marker is in Ohio. In fact, one of our reporters went to Ohio last year, talked with her family. She still suffers from a lot of the brain damage, but she seems to be doing fine. She's alert. She's aware of what's going on around her. In fact, there was a 2007 report that was initiated by the district attorney's office in which a forensic psychologist went to interview Jill Marker and found that despite her injuries, she still seems alert and still seems very aware and still believes that she made the right identification.
And her family does as well. She has since gone blind, and she delivered a child while she was in a coma after the beating.
Right.
And how's he doing?
The son is doing fine.
Yeah.
She requires 24-hour care.
And her parents are the caregivers right now.
Pretty much.
Yeah. She has since divorced from her husband, but she's up in Ohio in that home.
Yes.
Michael, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Michael Hewlett is a legal affairs reporter with the Winston-Salem Journal. We're live at the Triad Stage in Greensboro. Singer-songwriter William Howard is here with us. He's got Chad Neal accompanying him on the guitar, and he's going to play something for us right now. We're going to take a short break on the State of Things. Stay with us.
Save tonight. I feel the sun creeping up like tick tock. Trying to keep you in my ear, but if not, just keep running from tomorrow with our lips locked. Yeah, you got me begging, begging, baby, please don't go. If I wake up tomorrow, will you still be here? I don't know. I'm gonna find you, baby, please don't go, 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 baby, please don't go, 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 baby, please don't go, 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 baby, please don't, baby, please don't run away from my bed, start another day, same in there. And the sun creeping up like tick-tock. We're trying to keep you in my ear, but if not, just keep running from tomorrow with our lips locked. Yeah, you got me begging, begging, baby, please don't go. If I wake up tomorrow, will you still be here? I don't know. If you feel the way I do, I'm gonna find you, baby, please don't go, 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 baby, please don't.